Are you done shining your glasses, Jackson?
No, it's never done. It's an ongoing process. I have to see the world clearly for what it is.
I can see clearly now.
I'm tempted to go.
You're going to breathe heavily on my face. For all you people listening.
You're used to that, aren't you, when you're out in the street, Jackson?
I'm not, funnily enough.
We'll make you used to it, it's all good. So, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're proud to bring you another episode of At Random, the podcast. You heard it here first.
Oh yeah, baby, yeah.
Macho Man Randy Savage has very kindly agreed to join us for this one. He has a keen interest in game engines.
So yes, tonight we're going to be talking about what makes up a game engine. And my name is John Wordsworth.
My name is Rick Timmis.
And my name is Jackson Matthews.
So we've all got a bit of an interest in games around the table here.
Mm.
And I think now that you've got addicted to iRacing, Rick, might be the perfect time to scratch
drug.
A bit beneath the surface.
Oh, that's not a gateway drug, man. I've been absorbed. I've been assimilated by the board. I can't get off it. I cannot get off the thing. I'm on it till like 1 a.m. every day, and I'm waking up like, oh God, I'm back. And I get out and I think, oh no, I'm not going to play it tonight. And then before I know it, I've got to get the ironing board out, man. Yeah. I'm off setting the gear up. Yeah.
I love it. You're so classy, Rick. It's like everyone else is like, oh, I've got to get back to my Xbox or my console. You're like, got to get the ironing board out to play iRacing on the edge of the sofa.
Oh yeah, you need to see my rig. It's like a steering wheel mounted to the end of the ironing board with a laptop sat on it. I mean, they take great credence when I overtake people. Look out, son, I'm overtaking you. Ironing board coming through.
That's the kit car equivalent, isn't it, in iRacing?
Yeah. I'm such a cheapskate. I'm the same with everything. I won't even buy an operating system. I've got to use Linux because it's free.
But you did buy a steering wheel, so.
I did, yeah. But that was only because they told me that I wasn't allowed to race with them anymore if I kept using that joystick.
Oh, brilliant. So, yes, and I know you like games, Jack. I've got a hint that you quite like them.
Some of them. Only the ones with really good game engines.
Precisely. Good answer, Jack. So, I thought maybe today we could maybe scratch beneath the surface and have a look at what makes a game tick.
Yeah, I think so. So, should we start first of all by just talking in general about, let's get away from the bit that you see in a game, and just talking about the game, and what is a game engine in generic terms. Maybe start there, and then we'll just drill you with a bunch of questions, John, from there, until we get the details out. You will tell us the answers!
Yeah, I'll do my best. I mean, obviously, I'm no game creation expert or anything yet, but have written a couple of engines, so.
Yeah, and you're familiar with these.
No game creation expert. I have written a couple of engines. I'd just like to remind you, I was the first person to score 1,000,000 points on your Anchor Points game. This is no expert in game engine games. Yeah, cool, we can buy that. Not.
I guess this is quite an interesting show. If you want to make games, obviously, hopefully you'll find it interesting. But if you just want to have a little tweak around with something like the Skyrim mod kit as well, I think we'll go into modding perhaps a bit later in the show, but hopefully it'll be interesting as well. So obviously at the heart of it, when you say what's driving the game, I'm trying to think of a sensible way of breaking this down, but I guess from the complete top level view, you've got your assets, so you've got all your models, all your textures and all your sound effects, and they've been created using tools like Photoshop or movie creation tools for your sort of intro video, and they all just sit there in folders. But what really makes it all tick is the code, which I'm going to call, I think that's the game engine essentially, and it can range from anywhere from one guy who's written code for 3 months to a team of maybe 15 who have been writing code solidly for like 3 years. And the language that it's written in used to always be, has to be written in C right down to the bare bone, kind of make it as efficient as possible. But nowadays you can write a game engine in pretty much any language because computers are fast enough to handle these things.
Would it be fair to say that the real world analogue to what you're talking about, to what a game engine is, would be like, I don't know, scientific laws, like the laws of physics, all the like the rules and laws and code that govern what goes on and when.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one part of it, I guess. And when we break it down a bit further, that definitely makes it one part of it, part of what a game engine is. But there are so many parts to a game engine. You know, you've got to think about everything that happens in the game, and someone somewhere has had to write some code to make that happen. So all the things that you kind of dismiss to start with, such as the sound effects being played,
mm-hmm.
That all has to, you know, someone will have written a class to load in all the sound files when the game starts up, play those sound files out so it sounds like they're in the 3D environment around you. And some games have very sophisticated kind of effects, so sound effects are pushed through filters on the fly to make it sound that you're in a dark, dank cave.
Mm-hmm.
And that same sound effect will sound quite different when you're out in an open field. And that's just obviously one element of the engine. But all these modules of the game engine work together. And in essence, what they do is they take the resources, those sound effects, files, models, textures, the world files, mix it together with quite often what would be essentially a database of information. So the quests that you might go on in World of Warcraft,
mm-hmm.
Scripts that all guys will say, and that will be kind of some database, and then the code will turn all that into the interactive experience that you get when you play a game. So I guess that's the very top level view of what a game is. And then I think we will look mostly at the game engine element,
mm-hmm.
and the sort of technical coding part,
mm-hmm.
which I think, you know, is kind of the most interesting, I guess, to sort of tear into. And fortunately, I've found a nice diagram on the internet which will break down the major elements of a game engine. I won't go into that much detail for each one, but I think it's worth at this point, instead of just saying it's a massive block of code, to have an idea of how that massive block of code is broken down. And so typically, you've got kind of... So quite often, you've essentially got two layers going on as well. So there's a development of a game engine, which is actually often separate from the development of a game.
Mm-hmm.
So you can develop a first-person shooter engine, something like the Unreal Engine, which you'll see powering, well, traditionally Unreal, but things like Gears of War. But the development of that system is actually almost completely separate to the development of the game on top.
What is it, like a skin? Is it a cosmetic thing? Like everything that you slap put into all the boxes can come afterwards? Like you're just giving like a bunch of the framework, so to speak. Is that a good way to put it? I'm just trying to wrap my head around the abstraction of it. You've got a framework, and onto that you put on your own your panels and paintwork and other spoilers and wing mirrors or whatever.
Yeah, I guess you mentioned earlier the kind of the game rules,
mm-hmm.
you know, the rules of the world you're living in. That would all exist within the game,
mm-hmm.
element. The engine is more of a machine, which is a well-oiled machine, which exists to turn your resources into something which you see on the screen. So you've obviously got piles of model files and textures and skins and particle effects. They're all just files on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And the engine's primary purpose is to put all those together into some sort of 3D world and then throw them up on the screen. So the engine itself will concern itself with that. And then the game, which is, again, quite often written on top of the engine after the engine's been developed, will take all those kind of core fundamental mechanics and then turn it into a game. So while you might write into the game engine the facility for things to collide in with each other, because that happens in a lot of games. You know, two balls need to bash into each other, or anything needs to collide.
Two balls collide. That's the name.
Break
apart.
That's
the name of our next game, when two balls collide.
But I guess in that example, the game engine knows what to do when two objects collide in a physics environment.
It knows to just get out of the way and just like leave them to it, because like you're not getting mixed up in any of that.
But the balls themselves, you've made them in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the engine provides an environment, it's like a sandbox, and then the game says, actually, in our game, we're going to have this environment, which you've already written in the engine, we're going to make an environment, we're going to make three balls, and one's going to be red, green and blue, and the game will describe how all that works.
I've not got quite a clear vision of this, but I want to just summarise something back to you in a kind of illustrative sort of way. And I've just started thinking about something like a two. So we're talking at the moment, it sounds like we're talking about like almost like a 3D kind of engine type world, like Unreal is a 3D engine. But in my own mind, I was just trying to think about how to explain that in a series of layers. And if I put it into a 2D platformer, so if it's just like a platformer game, then what I might have is I might have my various sprites and images, some of which would be backgrounds and some of which would be the little sprites themselves. And let's say I've got a cat and a dog that are in the game, for example. So the cat might be one object and the dog would be another object. And the game engine's job would be to enable you as the programmer to subclass the main aspect, to create take a main an object, a creature class, and make the dog and make the cat, and it's got a set of properties that you can then utilize. And part of those properties would be to say it uses this sprite graphic, and when it goes woof woof it makes this sound, so it uses that sound file. And so you've got that level there, which is, and so the game engine then is about the object class that is the object that is enabling you to create these things. Then you've got the background itself. Now the background, is the background a class, or is that when you run along and you've got to jump over the wall and you can't go through the wall, is the background being handled as an object, or is he treating that as an environment? How does that bit work with the little characters?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a whole host of ways you could program this sort of model, but quite often you'll have, say, a background class, and then within that it might have a draw method, which when it gets to the draw method you can tell it which images to draw. It might be slightly more abstract than that, so it might be a background class, and then you can have a list of properties, you know. This is a background, nothing interacts with it. Here's all the images that I want to draw parallaxed, you know, three or four layers. But that one background layer is kind of treated as a separate unit usually. So that, at least when I've written my games, I just sort of, here's a background class. You can add loads of things to it, so little animated birds and stuff, but all it's going to do is draw. And it might animate over time, but it's still just going to draw. Nothing's going to interact with it. And on top of that, you'll have kind of a game layer in which you then add sort of nodes as children. So you end up with this kind of graph, I guess, of all the elements in your game.
Now, so those two, that construct that we've just talked about there, if we were to wrap that up into one aspect, then that would be like the UI aspect of it, wouldn't it? Be the visual aspect that we get to see, and maybe the audio aspect that is being called. So then if we go down another layer, drill down a little bit deeper to get into that, then the next aspect we've got is how the gameplay goes along, for example. So, and that's also got to be managed by the storyline, and you were like talking about a database there. So so like the UI bit is handling pulling images onto the screen and pulling sounds onto the screen, but then we'll have something else in the engine that's going to manage the storyline.
I guess a good way of describing the difference between the game and the game engine is to think of a web server. And now the Apache, say, is essentially the game engine. On its own, it does nothing.
Yeah.
But it provides a platform for you to write a site on top of. So the game engine, it typically, is something like Apache. It gives you a whole bunch of constructs and methods which you can use. So like when you write a PHP site, you can use all your Apache mods, which is kind of the engine. But all the visuals and all the logic is then handled by the site itself, which you've written in PHP. And I guess that's how a game and a game engine are different.
Okay.
So the game engine is written to expose all these methods to you, but on its own it does nothing. You know, it literally won't. You can't run it on its own. Really. And the same way you can't really run Apache with no scripts.
No, because Apache is basically just a way to send and retrieve files via HTTP over the network transport. Now, game engine's surely got much more complicated than just Apache, because Apache's got to do one function, whereas a game engine if we go to take it from the ground up, the game engine's got to interact with all the hardware layers, hasn't it? It's got to pull data in from the keyboard. It's got to display information on the screen. I mean, so at some level, the game engine at a base layer has got to interact with the operating system APIs to drive sound, drive graphics, pass data into graphics cards, pull stuff in and out of memory, etc.
This sounds like all a massive pain to write a new one every time. So this is what this is why I gather there's a big business with people selling engines. It's like you can use our engine for a fee, because Christ, you wouldn't want to go through that every time, would you?
Precisely, and
not
that's
when it's
why
been done well already.
That's why you see big companies using the Unreal Engine. I mean, in the this idea of as engines have grown. So 20 years ago, when everyone were writing little 2D games, and there was any kind of one set of hardware to worry about because you were writing it for the BBC Micro, then you'd just sit down and write your game engine and your game together. There wouldn't really be a separation. In the same way that you could write a website as a C app without any scripting or anything, you could just write a little C program which dished out all the right pages. It wouldn't be very elegant, but if you only needed a 6-page site and there were no things like Apache, you'd do that. Over time, as games have grown more complex and had to support wider platforms and more technologies, they've become more and more complex, and that's why you're seeing a lot of people using like the Unreal Engine now, because they're written in such a flexible way, you can make a wide range of games using the same engine.
Is that the reason that's the one that I keep... Is it the most popular, first of all?
Unreal is... I don't know if it's the most popular, but I would wager that it is in the sort of AAA studios. So you see a large number of Xbox games that when it loads up, it'll flash the Unreal Engine logo at you. And they've hit upon a really good model, actually. So you can... I mean, anyone can actually download the Unreal Engine and just start going with it right now. And the game itself is written in a different language to the engine. So you write, if you're writing small games with the Unreal Engine, you write it all in the Unreal scripting language. Now, bigger studios can get hold of the source code and play with the engine as well. But for many small games that you download, things like Dungeon Defenders, I suspect that's mostly written in Unreal Script on top of the Unreal Engine, which will get compiled in to some sort of bytecode.
And this is why the Unreal Engine is such hot stuff, because it's so flexible, easy for a developer to use.
Precisely. So you literally throw some 3D models at it and give it a pair of coordinates, and you've got a very basic game.
Yeah.
And the engine handles all that for you, and you just write your script on top of that. So it's very accessible as well. It's very easy to get into. Because they released a level editor maybe 10 years ago, all these people got all this experience with making Unreal levels.
Yeah.
So anyone, any Joe could just download the level editor, take all the assets, and build a new level with a little bit of simple logic in to make a lift go up and down and things.
Yeah.
But with all that experience, they obviously went, well, hang on, let's open this up a little bit more. And before you know it, you could have mods that made your shooter game into a spaceship game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, well, actually, if they can do that with just a mod kit, imagine if we made the engine and sold it.
Right.
So when you make a game, 20% of your profits might go to the Unreal development guys, but you never have to hire a coder to write your engine. So
that's like, well, it's been done well enough. It doesn't make sense to sort of like try and go back and write it from the ground up unless it doesn't meet your specific needs. I mean, the other engine that jumps to mind, because I don't know very many, is it a Crytek engine?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another another engine that they talk up quite a lot for Crysis, because you saw Crysis 2 the other day on John's machine. Now, I don't know if you know this, but what's the difference between, I mean, why did they decide that they needed their own engine for their game, and what's the difference between that and the Unreal Engine?
Yeah, so I guess it's probably a good time to briefly go over the core elements of a game. So as you correctly say, so obviously it's hard to get an image across.
Well, this diagram,
check out our website, then you can find it in the show notes.
Yeah,
but it's actually quite complex, but it's also quite simple if you just pick out the core bits of information. So as you say, at the bottom layer here, you've got your hardware, your operating system, and that is Windows or Linux or your Xbox just doing its thing. So that's there's no game at this area.
You ain't got no game.
most games were built upon, all games really, built upon these third-party SDKs. So if you were going to build the game engine tomorrow, the first thing you'd do is you'd pick, are we going to write it using OpenGL or DirectX? Now, most people have probably heard of those two.
Mm-hmm.
They're both... OpenGL is a graphics rendering library. So you can throw polygons at it and it'll draw them on the screen, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's very simplified. And you can give it lights and it'll render all that lighting in there for you as well, which is obviously work you, again, don't want to have to do in every single game.
Mm.
Now, how those polygons and models get from your hard drive to OpenGL is usually done by the game engine. So the process of drawing a model on the screen, you make a model using some package. The game engine will read that model in. Now, each game engine usually reads slightly different formats of model because you might want to have shine on your model, but a simpler game doesn't need to spend the resources on doing that.
Okay, so that sort of thing is what's being handled by the game engine. It looks at the model and says, do I render it with a coat of paint or a reflective sheen or something? This is all stuff that's done in engine, yeah?
Yeah, but then the game engine will sort of set all those options and throw it at something like OpenGL, which will then worry about actually rendering it.
Yeah, but that information will be being passed to OpenGL, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, now, when we say throw it, what you mean there is we call a method inside an object and pass it a reference to or pass it the data in some format, and then that object goes off and carries it on. This is this handing over from object to object as a...
Precisely.
Yeah, okay.
And that allows you to not have to worry about exactly how Windows is doing things.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't got to call all these assembly code on Windows and stuff, because that's OpenGL will worry about that.
Yeah.
But so you've got these decisions to make. Assume we're building a game engine from scratch. You've got these decisions to make. And that is, what SDKs and libraries are you going to build your game on top of? So there's DirectX or OpenGL. And again, the implications are massive for these. DirectX has got all these extra features in, but you're tying yourself to Windows.
Mm-hmm.
OpenGL is not quite as sophisticated, but you can then make a Mac version a lot easier.
So use OpenGL because it'll run on Linux. You know it.
So you kind of pick these SDKs. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily just pick them all at the start. Obviously, as you go through, you might add a few along the way. But that's one reason why some engines are built. Again, it's because they want to use these different underlying technologies.
Right.
If you want to make a cross-platform game, you wouldn't pick one that's built purely on Windows libraries.
No, sure. You have to make a compromise, I suppose, yeah.
And then you've got these kind of SDKs, and then on top of that, there's a bunch of kind of crap, I guess, that you write to talk to those SDKs from your game engine, so that every time you want to call OpenGL, you don't have to write loads of OpenGL code.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a bit like when you're writing a web application. You don't want to be writing your MySQL commands directly in every script.
Mm.
So you kind of, then you write your communications layer between these libraries and your app, which means you can call them without having to. And it does mean you can kind of switch in and out sometimes these libraries. So some games you'll see have both OpenGL and DirectX options. So your layer, you write a layer on top of these libraries that other people have already written so that you can use those libraries easier.
Mm-hmm.
Then on top of that, now, not all games will have to worry about too many of these, because you quite often get these through the libraries. But there's a number of kind of core systems. So you have to worry about... sometimes you might want to have a movie player so that you can play a movie at any point. It might be in the middle of a game, might pop up in a sub window. But the facility to play movies would be a core system,
mm-hmm.
which you would write completely independently, really. I mean, one guy could sit there and write it, and then whenever somebody else wants to use it, he just hooks it in with a link to a movie. So you've got a number of these core systems, and you've got all sorts of things like reading in your own personal file formats that you might have written to store game data. You might want to generate numbers that are random, better than what C just does off the sort of off the hat. So So you write these core systems, and you're still not really getting very close to a game. But you can see how it's a lot of work to build these systems.
Jesus, yeah.
but then you start to get to the slightly more fun bits, I guess. So your next step would be to write your resource manager. And this is a layer where you can pull in all those models and textures. So you'll have to define, you might want to define your own model format. You might find one that's suitable, but you might want the ability to put scars on your characters. And you need to somehow mark in the file where those scars are going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So you develop your own model format, which will quite often be very similar to another one, but with just a couple of extra features added in. And then you've got to code up a way of reading all these files in so that they can exist within your game. So that's essentially what the resources layer does. And then you actually start to get to the game, really.
Yeah, above that, it just looks like it goes nuts.
And so they would code these things so we can read these files in. This is essentially writing classes to hold that data,
yeah,
and then be able to hand it around. Or process it, so a class that can load in the data, and then here when we talked about the core systems and then the resource manager, so we might load the model in, but then we'll also have other methods that can manipulate that, that are probably calling on those core systems like the maths library and the other bits and pieces, yeah, underneath to do those calculations.
Precisely, so you might have an animated texture class, say, and then you might use one of your core systems to mix that up, maybe somehow sort of crop it, say,
mm-hmm,
and then you throw that at your platform layer to draw it when you need to.
Okay.
But then above the resource loading, that's when you start to get to all the things that would still be in the game engine and not in the game itself if you're building it in that kind of two separated units. But you've got things like the user interface layer, which is like the human interface layer. Most game engines will come with its own kind of collision and physics system. And it might be two-dimensional or three-dimensional, depending mm-hmm on what sort of engine you're writing. There'll typically be some debugging layer so that you can get lots of debugging information out. Because, as you can imagine, when a machine's this big, it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Then you'll have your kind of rendering system. So that will obviously be built on these previous layers that you've already written, but it will help you to more abstract create your world. So you can just sort of say, here's a class which is a light, here's a class which is a room, and here's a class which is a monster. I'm going to have one of these here, three of those there, and one of those there,
mm-hmm,
and then that box will understand how to turn all that information into things which you can throw at the graphics card through OpenGL. So that's the way it will, so that's what the rendering engine might do. Then you might have another sort of visual effects layer on top of that. So in more modern games, you see this cool HDR effect where you walk out of a door and everything's really bright for a few seconds while your eyes adjust.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be like a special effects team, I guess, writing your special effects code.
That's something all gamers can relate to. Sorry, it's all,
This is similar, I suppose, to the audio processing you were talking about, where a shot inside a cave sounds different to a shot because they process the amount of reverb on the fly. So just like, again, just here's the sound, here's the processing, mix it, file comes out, and you would literally just say to the processing engine, this is my sound file, give me reverb times 10, and back, and then that would then add the reverb and then hand it in to down through into the core system, which then hands it into the audio layer, which hands it to the OS, and it goes out through the speaker.
Precisely. So Skyrim's actually got a really cool, it's got like a really good model for describing this. So if you have got Skyrim, as 10 million people do, and you're interested in this sort of thing, I definitely advise getting the mod kit. But one of the things you see there is they've actually got a section. So it's basically a massive database when you open up the Skyrim editor. Apart from editing kind of world objects when you're dragging books and swords and monsters into the world, it's all just a big pile of data. But one of those sections of data is audio environments, and there's about 100 of them, and they've all got tweaks of slight little parameter tweaks on how your sound should appear if it's played in this environment, and then you pick the environment when you make a new part of the world. So so that's kind of what the, you know, these effects things might do. But then I think it's probably let's just skip over the rest pretty quickly, but I'll just mention them. But you've got kind of an animation system so that you know how you can load up models and separate animations and merge them together so the guys know how they're walking. And that can range from what is usually just like a simple bone animation system. So a model might have 30 different points in it connected through a simple, literally looks like a bone system in a human being. And then when one bone moves, all the ones underneath it will move with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are really clever ones, like I think it's called the Euphoria Engine, where they've basically built like a muscle system. And then it'll move the model around based on the muscle system and what it wants to achieve. So if it wants to get its hand up in the air, all the other muscles will move to accommodate it, and then all the polygons move as well.
Is that the one they used for that backbreaker football game?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. That was
incredible. It's in GTA 5 as well, I think.
Is it really? Good.
Yeah, I don't know. They haven't used it fully in GTA 5. They just used it for when people are hit or something. You know what I mean? They've only used it for one element of that.
But, yeah, it'd be nice to see them implement it across the board, because something like that, you're talking truly... truly reactionary worlds, aren't you? Like ones that actually respond to every little thing you do and everything they do within themselves as well. But I don't know what kind of computing power that would need to make it, to make that run nicely in a, on a commercial level. But it makes for incredibly interesting games as people sort of like test out everything that they can do, rather than everything. Well, you're talking about doing, if we go down that route, you're talking away with doing away with as much scripting as you can, aren't you? I mean, it's much lesser, it becomes pre-scripted at that point, and you're just talking about like implementing your own like, well, laws of physics in game, aren't you, rather than anything that are predetermined.
So that's I guess that's the animation system. And then you've got the foundations for your gameplay. So the idea that there is a world, the idea that there are actors within this world. But at the game engine level, you wouldn't define any of those. You just kind of have these subclasses, which let you then extend them later on. And the other thing, obviously, is online multiplayer. So there'll be a networking layer in there as well in the engine, which has the concept of sending positions and messages back and forth. But obviously, nothing's really that well defined. But then when you've got all that done, when you've spent your hundreds and thousands of man hours on that.
I was going to say, and this is, you think an operating system's complex, but this is like way more complex than that, isn't it? Crikey.
And then on top of that, you can build your game.
Finally get to put
the fun bit in. But obviously the joy is you can, all that stuff, well, it's really interesting to know about, you can generally get packages with all those done for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which for small developers is a godsend. When we made Icaroids for the Xbox, I thought, no, I'm going to write a bunch of these myself. And I did, but I regret it. but on top of that, so once you've got all those elements are in place, writing the game is the fun bit. You know, you extend that actor, which at the moment didn't do anything. You can just point it at a model, you can point it at a set of animations, you can give it effects for when certain things happen. And that's it. You know, all you have to code are how to use these elements. And they're essentially a PHP script. That are using things that are exposed to it from the game engine itself, and making the magic happen. And how that's driven, there are loads of ways that can be done. But again, the kind of database model from Skyrim is really quite cool, because you can see how it all plugs together very well. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, it only came out a couple of days ago, but I've seen it a bit before with Oblivion, but never really made a proper mod for it. So with the mod kit, they've essentially given you this database, and then they let you save changes to it as a separate file, which can then be applied on top of the main game. So when the game loads, it loads up the game, and then any mods you've got loaded, it will then override anything from the first database with the second one you provided it. So so within literally about half an hour, I was able to make a new spell. So you could summon up a troll, and then the troll would fight on your side and destroy all the bad guys. Because they'd done similar things, you know, you could do a bit of copying and pasting and mashing it together. And that's all handled with sort of basically a massive database of spells, effects and creatures and races and models and sounds and all that. And the game takes this database and turns it into what you see on the screen.
And do these effectively expose themselves as methods? You know, sort of like as methods that you can then control to create the troll object. And the troll object has these properties about it. Is it that kind of
that will be happening somewhere underneath. But I suspect they've been from that the Skyrim model is reasonably unique, I guess. I mean, that's reasonably unique. That's a bad grammatical phrase, isn't it? it's reasonably special. But in quite a few games, you would just have a troll class. If you wanted to make a new guy, you'd have to make a Angry Rick Timmis class to fight the trolls.
Oh, yeah!
I know you like fighting trolls. So. But in Skyrim, I think there's only one class, and that is Actor. And then it basically creates it from the database. So in the database, which is literally just rows of data, it'll have a link to a model, an animation system, how fast it moves, how quick it attacks, how many attacks it's got, how many hits it can take. And, you know, mm-hmm. There's probably about 300 fields or something for each creature that you put in there. What colour its trousers are, how long its hair is. And, mm-hmm. and then it knows what to do with all that information. And there's only probably one class, which is, you know, Actor in World, which it then morphs into this thing which you provide all the parameters for. Which is really cool, because obviously you just edit a few values and then you can make a blue troll or a green troll.
Yeah, so that makes making the action happen much simpler because of these multiple levels of abstraction that you've got.
So again, because the troll bit was already in the database, I just tweaked it a little bit to make the one that you summon is slightly different than the one that you just meet in the wild. Changed one of the effects so that instead of summoning a rock monster, it summoned a troll. And then that was it, really.
So to get all speculative, or not even, but maybe there's more stuff being announced. I mean, I gathered I saw some demonstration that Unreal did with that. I don't know, is this their new engine? They did this video where there was some guy and he got into a gunfight on a street, and it was all it was really crazy, insane stuff with street lights and ripples on water, gun cases falling in. It was just basically to show off the most ridiculous level of detail that could be rendered by their engine as possible. Now, was that done with the Unreal Engine or a new version of the Unreal Engine?
I think that was Unreal 3, the Unreal Engine 3, or maybe even 4. I think it was a new version, but I don't think it wasn't rewritten from the ground up. It's just been tweaked to become that over time. So it was the cutting edge version, as it were.
Right. So I guess what I'm driving at is where's the development headed? Where's the development and the invention going? I mean, is it just towards simulating more things at once? I mean, because you mentioned the thing with the muscles for the Euphoria engine. I mean, is there any other kind of innovation going on in that sort of way? Or is it just to do with covering more things, simulating more particles and stuff?
Yeah, well, the cool thing when you break the engine down as we have into all these different units is that you can then look at each unit and think, how are you going to innovate that part of the engine? Mm-hmm. Now, certain decisions you make will become reasonably fixed, and that's why you might want to pick a different engine over the one. That's why there is more than one engine, unlike Windows, say, where there's only one Windows. Apart from all the crappy marketing spin-off where you've got 70 versions. But there is an operating system, it's Windows. There isn't a game engine that runs all the games, because some of them will have, some are 2D, some are 3D. Some will have networking that's been enhanced to have hundreds of people running around for a strategy game. But in a shooter game, you just need accuracy.
Yeah.
Because you want to know if you shot them in the face or the hand.
Yeah.
Whereas in a strategy game, it doesn't matter because all the numbers are crunched on the server. You're not trying to be accurate.
Not sure.
So a lot of the future for these engines is just going to be adding innovations to each one of those sections. So the physics will get more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to simulate other effects in physics, like strong winds,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. You know, that instead of it just knocking everything back slowly, it'll push all the clothes and the hair and stuff, and it'll all animate with it. You'll be able to animate finer and finer details. So 10 years ago, a person's hand was a sort of a club, then it went to a bear paw, and now you've got fingers.
Yeah.
And at some point you'll have hairs on hands.
Yeah.
They're all animated, so when you zoom into someone's hand, you'll see all the hairs on the back of the hand.
Sure.
Blowing in the wind. I guess that's where the innovation is going, is adding even more depth to each one of these features.
Right, but already existing features, yeah.
Well, I guess there'll be new features as well. I mean, the idea of ragdoll physics was new. Eight years ago.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Now it's commonplace. So obviously it's hard to off the cuff, just say some features imagine, that like, exist that don't.
I was just wondering if there was any more like stories like about the euphoria and the muscles thing. Like if there was anything else that like I wasn't aware of. I mean, it's like you.
But I guess it's like Skyrim have brought in this kind of radiant quest system. So in the previous iteration called Oblivion, you could write quests where, you know, if I killed Bob, then Mary would get upset because it was Bob's husband, but that was pre-scripted. Mm. That was written into that one quest. So if I killed James, Jane wouldn't know because they hadn't written that link. In Skyrim, they've invented the kind of premise of relationships. Now you define a relationship between two people, and if you kill one, then the disposition from the other one is seriously downed. And now what effect that has also has to be scripted. But the fact that that's one more step towards having a realistic ecosystem of people. Mm. And the engine will then also pick a relevant living person as the target of a quest. So whereas before I'd have to specify Farmer Bob needs his potatoes back. It now says, oh, well, Farmer Bob's dead, so we don't want to actually make this quest be lost. So now it's Farmer Joe who lives in this place.
Right,
and it's
right.
Kind of semi-randomised. So I guess that's another place where I see it going a lot further forward, is this idea of a real world.
Mm.
And as part of that, there's going to have to be a lot of new innovations. You know, how are you going to turn it from these completely scripted environments to a system where if you go away for a week and come back, it's changed?
Yeah.
You know, and not because someone's written that change in, pre-done it.
Sure.
But actually, this person died of old age and this person was born, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's right. A living, breathing world, you know? You see that sort of a lot in... when Grand Theft Auto 3 came out and we started playing that, it was like, this just was like, this is amazing. You could just sit there. You didn't necessarily have to play the game properly to play the game. Like, remember when we all howled with laughter when one of us was playing it and he pulled out a gun and fired at a woman, yeah? And the woman started running away and she ran out into traffic and got hit by a car. Completely random event. Completely random and terrible and violent and awful event. Don't get me wrong.
And everybody laughed, Jack.
We all howled with laughter, yeah.
I think you'll say Jack was laughing, everyone else was horrified. Alright, carry on.
But we did it with a hint of sadness in our voices. But anyway, it's completely like unpredictable, random event that like makes that really brings these games to life because of like innovations in the engine and interactivity. I always come back to something that Hideo Kojima, the fella that did the Metal Gear Solid series, when he said the real developments, I mean, graphics are going to have to level off eventually, and all the development, all the extra power, all of that is going to go into the things that you can't necessarily see, but you can see the effects of them, sure, but it's all the stuff, as you say, talking about like the relationships and governing all this Radiant Quest business. I mean, that's the stuff that's really going to fill out these inflatable 3D characters. You know what I mean? They've got nothing going on under the hood necessarily. But yeah, that always come back to that really.
Which sounds to me like that's just more development and extension to the AI. Yeah. Mechanisms that are at play, which is kind of like the next logical thing, I suppose. If the look and feel, because the graphics and the sound is all there and it looks real, then the next logical step is to develop into the AI to make a game stand out, because the other effectively mute robo objects that are out there now actually interact and make decisions based on the environment, based on the parameters that are being set around them. They start making decisions, and as they make decisions, that changes other objects.
Yeah.
You can see quite quickly how that would be, that would get really interesting. And then we'll have Skynet, Skyrim.
Yeah. It's quite cool to see that, the beginning of that in things like Skyrim. Like if you go to the village at 3 a.m, everyone's in bed, and you can go find them in bed if you want and steal their stuff, or you can just wait around until they wake up. And you know, too early in the morning, they're not going to sell you anything because it's too early for the shop to open.
Yeah,
and that's right. And if you go later in the evening, they're at the pub.
Yeah,
that's where you're
quite right.
But you know, it's cool to see that. That's obviously reasonably forced at the moment. They're all forced into these pre-written scripts, but there'll be a point when that's much more realistic, you know, and someone just goes, right, I want 100 people, click.
Yeah. This is when games really start getting interesting, isn't it? When they make you feel something, when there's consequences to your actions. A really simple example of how this like affects the way you feel about playing a game was in when I played Doom 3, and it was the moment where you were in front of the computer console and you have to send a distress message because the base is being taken over by like the hordes of hell, and the scientist guy says, okay, yeah, send a message, trooper, and then your sergeant turns up and says, no, don't send that message to them. And no, sorry, that was the other way around. The scientist said, don't send. The scientist says, send it. But that's by the by. But you're thinking, well, you can't both be right. One of you guys, I mean, I'm supposed to be able to trust both of you, but one of you has got to be wrong. And all of a sudden you think, nobody tells you either way. They're both equally plausible scenarios. And I think in the end, I didn't send the message. And the scientist said, oh, you're a fool, soldier. And I still don't know what would have happened if I had sent it. You know what I mean? But I might go back and play it one of these days just to see if it affects the game. Probably it doesn't, but I like the little
Well, I mean, there's obviously a lot of complexity that goes into this kind of stuff. My head was stretching a little bit there, so trying to sort of think about things. But I think I start to understand a little bit about ultimately where we're ending up is we're ending up with layer upon layer upon layer of abstraction. And for every layer that we add, it simplifies the speed with which we can write a game and how quick we can develop it. And we'll choose a game engine depending on what we want to write. If we want to write a 3D space game, we might use a Twitch engine. If we want to write a Quake type shooting up, we might use Unreal or the Quake engine. We'd make some decisions on that because the engine itself would expose a load of APIs and methods to us that would be suitable for creating that environment. And it's through those API methods that allow us to do things fairly simple, like, for example, object this has this property, position is this. And then rather than us having to write all of that code, we just tell it, go there, go there, go there, and off it goes. And then the game engine takes care of the rest of it.
Cool. I'm glad that I was aware it got pretty deep in there, but I'm glad that was...
Deep is fine.
I was going... boom, boom,
boom. Glad I didn't drown you, Rick.
Awesome. Well, I think that, I mean, we talked earlier on about this being a series, and I think it should be. I mean, I think that gives us some background for what's going on with an engine. So we'd probably put a few of these together, but maybe we should do another show next to look at the different engines and maybe describe some of the differences between them, look at some of the ones that are out there.
Definitely. I think it would be really interesting to take that and have a case study, as it were, of maybe three engines. And that will hopefully help to explain a bit more in this show. So if you're fortunate enough to be listening to this in a month's time, the next show in this series will hopefully help explain this show.
Yeah.
This show for dummies.
So there'll be Game Engines Part 2. If in the interim you've got any feedback or any questions that you want to ask us about game engines or bits of things that you want us to look up or discuss, then get in touch with us. You can email us show@random.org. I'm done. My brain is fried. I've had about enough of all of this kind of stuff for a minute. I just want to go back to my operating system and cuddle my penguin. I've been Rick Timmis. You have a good evening.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go off and play Skyrim, I think, now. All that talk has made me itchy. So good evening. I've been John Wordsworth.
Jackson Matthews reminding you that real men write their own engines. Small town.